This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 176 of the Wrestling Insomniac. Wait, that's my other podcast that I haven't done in a long time. Should I start over or just run with it? 176.
Like, who are you asking?
Of what did you watch this week?
177. You literally just asked me, is it 176? And I went, and you said 177. I said, yeah, 177. And then you said 176. I thought you were just messing around with the Wrestling Insomniac thing. But
nah, I fucked up. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 177 of What Did You Watch This Week. My name is Mike.
And my name, as always, is John.
We're going to talk about shows and stuff.
Yeah, with an emphasis on the shows and stuff.
Mostly stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is the first time ever
that you drummed your
food. I mean, I watched TV shows, but I didn't watch any shows.
You getting all existential on me here?
No,
you're trying to get, like, deep?
No, but, like, I watched some, like, How I Met Your Mother to pass the time at work.
Oh, I see.
And my wife and I have watched a bunch of the British British Baking Show.
The British Bulldog Show?
Yeah. It's a great tag team. Anyways, the British Baking Show there. But I kept meaning to watch Carnival Row and didn't.
Okay.
I did not watch any of the new Dark Crystal.
Okay.
In my defense, I worked my last 4 days since we last recorded at Dispatch, and I had six shifts in those 4 days.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to run with. But I did watch a bunch of movies.
I ended up watching three different shows and, like, four movies.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what did you watch for shows?
Well, I did watch Carnival Row the first couple of episodes. I'm really doing my best to spread things out, not binge things. Binging can be fun, and unfortunately, one out of the three shows that I watched, I binged all three seasons of it. But that was a good background show. Anyway, Carnival Row, I just watched the first two, maybe three episodes. And what's really interesting is if you watch all the trailers for Carnival Row, they show, like, the love between these two characters and them trying to find each other. And, what? Oh, yeah, sure. So that's not where the show picks up. The show picks up, like, after a lot of time has passed since those trailers, basically. And it's very good so far. But again, I'm only a couple episodes in. It's a very dark show, you know, reminds me of, like, Gotham or the Sherlock Holmes stuff that Robert Downey Jr. was in. Dirty, you know, steampunky type where you've got the men who went over to Tirnanoc and stole from the fairies and the fae folk and all those. Cara Delevingne starts off as a basically a smuggler. She's helping people get away, doing an underground railroad kind of thing for fae folk. And she, like, right off the bat, things go tits up, and she ends up in the City of Men, where most fae folk are either subservient or whores. You know, some of them have little markets on the street, but they're treated as third-class citizens. Indentured servitude is a big thing. You know, when they find her, they're like, well, you still owe money on your contract, so we're sending you to the son and daughter of the person that you were indebted to. And Orlando Bloom's character is an inspector.
Okay.
He inspects crimes that involve the Fey folk and such. And, you know, like he starts off
looking for,
yeah, kind of. His character's pretty neat. You know, he starts off looking for a character who seems to, every 3 weeks, strikes and brutally kills a Fey folk with a tack hammer. And so trying to figure out who it is based on one actually survived and came out of her coma and gave a description and, you know, talked about this and this and trying to figure out the clues. And then, I like it so far. The third episode, I think, which is where I'm at, is a flashback episode. So it goes back to where they first met. But yeah, I do enjoy it. I'm looking forward to watching more of it. But again, I'm going to pace myself so that I don't burn out on it.
Well, I definitely plan on checking it out.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, well, I don't know how many, I don't think I'm going to have any at-work shows anymore. I think I'm going to watch everything at home now.
Yeah. But you're going to have time to do that because you're going to have evenings and such.
Yeah.
And I did watch the first episode of the Dark Crystal series.
How'd that treat you?
I fucking love it.
Okay.
I got to say,
I wasn't sure. Based on your pause and the look on your face, I thought you were going to say it's the shits.
Well, I just watched it today before I came over here, honestly. And I was like, okay, I want this to be fresh in my mind so that if it's bad, I can report on that. If it's good, I can report on that. So throwing aside the Dark Crystal, you know, the original movie from when we were kids.
Sure.
If you just want to look at this, they've kind of reworked the mythology a little bit. Right in the beginning, they have the narrator who talks about the world and talks about how they've got the Crystal of Truth, and the Crystal of Truth is the world, you know.
Right.
It basically is the lifeblood of the world, and it sustains everything and everyone, and it causes everything to grow. And there are 7 different tribes of Gelflings, which is interesting because, I mean, I know I said throughout the movie, but in the movie, you know, there were no Gelflings left. And there are 7 different tribes, and there's like the ones that live underground and the ones that live over here. And, you know, they all kind of exist, but don't really, you know, mix it up with each other.
This was a prequel to
it. Is a prequel.
Okay, so it makes sense that they'd be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And they talk about how then one day there's the All Mother or whatever who sits there and she guards the Crystal of Truth. And then one day the Skeksis appeared from the sky and they came down with tales of the universe beyond. And talked about what else was out there, and they gave the All-Mother essentially what sounds like a telescope and showed her how she could look to the cosmos and she could look to the universe. And so that was all she wanted to do at that point. And she told the Skeksis, I entrust you with guarding the Crystal of Truth. So they kind of have become like the, not the gods, but, you know, they came from the skies above and now they are in charge of everything.
Yeah.
And they're gross. One of them, I was like, is this the guy that did Starscream's voice? This sounds familiar. And I was like, no, it's not quite right. No, it's Mark Hamill. Yeah. They have a lot of star power in this. The main male Gelfling is Taron Egerton.
Oh, wow.
The one who played Missandra in Game of Thrones is his girlfriend.
Okay.
Anya Taylor-Joy, who was the girl in Split and Glass, you know, the one who survived. She plays one of the Gelflings. It's just, you look down through the list and you're like, oh my God. But it's like each one of the characters has 2 actors attributed to them. One is the voice, one is the puppeteer, which is cool. And this is, you were asking about this, Mike. So let me put your mind at ease. These are Jim Henson puppets.
Nice.
Dude. There, I mean, like, to the point where she feeds this little thing, this worm thing. She goes, oh, here, eat. And it does, like, the Cookie Monster thing. You know, it's like, nah, 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 and the stuff's falling out of its mouth. They've got the dead, hollow eyes.
Nice.
But gorgeous.
Right.
But they're still puppets. And, like, when they talk, they just kind of like, nah, 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 nah. It's phenomenal. It's everything I could have wanted. It's beautifully done. Don't look at me like that. Good God. It's a generational thing. You wouldn't get it. Mike's wife is glaring at me like I sprouted a second head because I'm talking about how hot the Gelflings are.
It's from the Dark Crystal.
You'll find out. And no, they're not hot, but they just, the puppeteering is everything that you came to expect from The Labyrinth or from Fraggle Rock.
Nice.
It's, you're going to watch it and you're going to go, oh my God, I'm back.
That's probably why Jenna watched the first episode the other day at work and she's like, I can't get through this. I go, why not? She's like, I don't know. What's wrong? Was something wrong with Jim Henson's creature puppets? kind of lame. Oh, that means they're cool, I bet. It's a generation.
So the husband and wife team that did most of the design of the puppets for Labyrinth had a son. They named him Toby, like the kid in Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Now he's an adult, and he did the design of these creatures.
Love it.
Dude, it's...
Love it.
You are going to love this. I booted it up. I watched the first episode, and I was practically drooling. I was like, I need more of this. It's a grand fantasy tale. You know, by the end of the first episode, this one's going off on this quest. This one's going off on this quest. It's so good. I cannot wait to watch more, but I'm going to limit myself again. I'm going to try to do, like, one episode at a time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely look forward to checking that out, because that looks like something to be pretty awesome.
So you didn't watch any, like, TV shows of note?
No.
Huh. It's interesting. I mean, not that you don't, it's not like you had a responsibility, but yeah. I get that. Sometimes I do that.
Yeah, what was that show you burned through three seasons of?
So you remember we'll talk about this part a little bit later on, but remember when we watched the Banana Splits? And I was like, the mom looks familiar. And I looked her up and I was like, no, I don't know her. But it's issues on this show, Working Moms, keeps popping up on my Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
I ended up burning through all three seasons. 13 episodes per season.
Wow.
This is so not my wheelhouse. This is like, it's called Working Moms because literally they're all mothers and they all have jobs in one way or another. And you know me and kids. It's,
yeah. You're great with them. You don't want them.
It's... a good show.
Huh.
It's actually really good. The main woman there, the one who has like she's got the weird thing where like her upper lip is kind of pushed up and you can see her teeth. Her name's Catherine Reitman. She's Ivan Reitman's daughter.
Okay.
She wrote and directed a number of these episodes. She is the workaholic mom. Yep. She's got the fresh baby who's like 8 months old. She wants to excel at her career. She's all about moving
up. Wrong with that?
No, she's all about, you know, moving up at the agency that she's at. So several times, like, she misses date night because she's working late to be with the boys. Her husband is a stay-at-home dad. He does his best, but, you know, he kind of – it's never dramatic to the point of, like, soap opera. But they do have some, you know, hey, why aren't you here for your husband and your kid? What's wrong with you?
Right.
Then you've got Anne, who was the one that was on the Banana Splits. She has like a 9-year-old and a freshly minted, you know, 8-9-month-old. Her 9-year-old is a fucking asshole.
Okay.
A complete asshole. She's a little bitch. And she only gets worse as the seasons go on. You know, the kind that talks back to mom and dad, lies to their faces, steals from them. 9 years old. That mom is also very much the aggressive, domineering alpha female.
Mm-hmm.
She's a therapist, and she's not a very good therapist because she basically tells people to fuck off.
Okay.
And then their third one is Frankie, and she's kind of the weird middle-aged woman who is a lesbian and has a baby and is going through postpartum. And like right in the first episode, she's like, yeah, I think I might have a touch of the postpartum. And, you know, has different things happen where she, you know, falls asleep in the tub and almost drowns the baby and things like that.
Taking that call.
Yeah. There's a lot of humor in it, and it's the good kind of humor. Mm-hmm. You know, like one girl sitting there and she's like, oh, this is a good point where I should actually say that I am a hell of a DJ. No, she's not. Forget that. Strike that from the record. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd say it. You know, that good kind of humor that where it's just like natural flowing. I really honestly recommend this show. It's half an hour episodes, 13 episodes per season. It's filmed in Canada. They talk about Canada. You know, there's a woman who her ex-boyfriend she always refers to as the Mountie. When the Mountie left, he took this. But I really enjoyed it. It was compelling.
It pops up in mine all the time, so it must be a good comedy.
Check it out. Like, honestly, I had a lot of fun with it. There are some serious moments. There are some sad moments. And there are some moments when you go, what the fuck is wrong with this person? But for the most part, I just really enjoyed it. So I give it a big sell. Like,
okay.
39 episodes. I put it on as a background
show. Half-hour show.
Yep. Yep. And that Catherine Reitman, she's pretty good. You know, she's also written for, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I like. But, yeah, it was
nice.
It's impressive. I definitely recommend this to people. So, yeah.
I guess I saw this advertisement or whatever for this documentary that's on, that was on Amazon called King of Arcades. So I decided to check it out. I mean, like, I loved King of the Kong, Fistful of Quarters. I loved the
Man versus Snake.
There's this one about the guy that tries to buy every single original NES game, the NES Quest or whatever. That's a great one. Even the Atari one about the E.T. Bear games. Yeah. Like, they're all interesting because it's all stuff. So I'm like, oh, this might be in my wheelhouse. So this documentary came out in 2014.
Okay.
It stars this guy named Richie Knuckles. He was in a punk band called the Knuckle Sandwiches or something like that.
Okay.
And he was the lead singer. And his name's Richie, so he took the nickname Richie Knuckles. And he just, man, this guy just loves, arcade games. Like, it's his passion.
Okay.
And what he's good at is restoring them. And I mean, like, beautifully restoring these cases.
Okay.
And even a few times building brand new cases, painting them to the original colors, and getting the original stickers to put on the sides of the cases so that it looks like the original stand-up game. And everything inside's, he's just really smart when it comes to, like, being able to rebuild all these video games and consoles and bring these ones back from the dead, all these old and rare classic games. So he opens his own arcade.
Okay.
And basically the story is about him, his love of video games, of restoring the arcade games, not so much video games, but the arcade games, restoring them, the struggles he has with financially trying to keep the arcade afloat because it's in a time frame when arcade's unpopular.
Yeah.
Ends up going out of business, closing up shop, and then a few months later, like 9 months later, opens up a smaller one someplace else. But he did, like, these Donkey Kong tournaments, and he did all this other stuff. So also in this documentary is Billy Mitchell.
Of course.
Steve Wiebe. Both from King of the Kong, and then Twin Galaxies, Walter Day. Galaxies and does the arcade game world records and on and on and on, all this stuff. And it was really good. If you liked King of the Kong or you liked Man versus Snake or any of the, just watch it. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. It's one that, like, I'll watch if it's still on it. Like, a few months from now, I probably will throw it on Amazon again.
Thanks.
Because I really enjoyed it. It was just, there's a lot of nostalgia in there, but also just the care, how much passion he has for rebuilding these machines. So then when you're on Amazon, you can click on more like this.
Yeah.
Well,
they're not always that good.
You can go on a YouTube journey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went on Amazon documentary journey.
Okay.
So that led to me watching a documentary that's called Skips Stones for Fudge. This came out in 2016. It's about 51 minutes long. And this is about the world of competitive stone skipping.
Okay.
This was so impressive, I'm shocked. It's mostly about these two guys, and they trade the Guinness World Record back and forth for skipping stones.
Okay.
Guess what the current world record is?
37.
81.
Wow. How do you even count that?
They videotape it, and you can see the breaks in the water.
Wow.
But watching these guys stand there and skip a stone, and the curve they put on the damn thing, and the technique with which they throw, and it hits that water and just goes, and it goes like 400 feet. So they have to go. I mean, like, it's crazy. It's so interesting. This is worth your hour to watch this. If you've ever even just, like, been down at the shore and grabbed some rocks and tried to skip out and see what I can do, because you have, this is worth your hour. It's so interesting, it shocks me.
Okay.
Hold on. The Skipping Stones documentary. Surprisingly interesting?
Yeah, they were all crazy, but very interesting.
they were kind of crazy.
Okay, clearly one guy.
One guy was, like, super passionate about it, like, over-the-top passionate about it. But still, it was really interesting, like, surprisingly interesting.
Well, speaking of documentaries.
Yeah.
And I ended up watching that Amazing Jonathan documentary.
What a dick, right?
So, first off, I just wanted to say, based on what you were just talking about, I love the clip that's in the middle of it, of the interview with Marc Maron.
Oh, yeah.
Where he says, documentary. Fuck documentaries. There's too many documentaries out there. They're everywhere. Everything's a documentary. My God. It's like documentary is basically like the, what did he say? Like the follow up or the fallback for people who aren't good at writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kept waiting, I guess, in this documentary, and I should use air quotes there,
yeah,
because this was not a documentary about him dying.
No.
This was a documentary about making a documentary.
Right. But it wasn't just as simple as that, because it didn't start that way.
This was all over the place, and it was weird as shit.
It starts out about this guy, Ben, who's making a documentary on The Amazing Jonathan. So I think this documentary is like 80 minutes long, hour and a half long, whatever it is. So the first half hour...
Dude, this thing was 90 minutes long.
Okay, 90 minutes, hour and a half. So like the first half hour is like you watching, it's the standard documentary of Amazing Jonathan, talking about his life, talking about his health, talking about getting sick, talking about, you know, everything else. And then all of a sudden it goes, you see like Jonathan talking to the director, and it pops up the thing, it says like, oh, well, that'd be interesting with that second crew. What second crew? And then the caption, like the card comes up that says the second documentary crew.
Yeah.
And it's just like, holy shit. That's when it changes.
Yeah.
Now it becomes about Ben, who's trying to make this documentary on The Amazing Jonathan, and he's given someone else permission to do it.
Yeah, and it just keeps getting weirder from there, because that other documentary crew doesn't want to be part of Ben's documentary.
Doesn't want to be on camera.
They don't want to be on camera.
Yeah.
They don't want, like, their faces have to be blurred yeah. out, and their voices are even modulated, so it's like, yeah. whoa, 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 whoa. And they even have a couple early on, a couple of shots where it's like they're filming stuff and they're like, all right, we're all set. You can go in now.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah. It's like they're competing for the same type of footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, in the beginning, yeah, he yeah. was talking to Jonathan and they were showing clips from his old stuff.
It's the standard.
He came right out and he was like, oh yeah, I did cocaine for a long time. But then I switched to speed. And he's like, you switched to speed? He goes, yeah, you want to see me do something right now? And he's like, I guess so.
Yeah.
Wait, how do you smoke speed? Okay, so it's meth. And right. then they switched to his girlfriend and she's like, you know, on the first date, if he had told me that he was into meth, I would have left him right there. But he didn't tell me that. And God damn it, I fell in love with him and now I'm stuck. And then he's over the bathroom and he's like off screen. He's like, what are you saying? She's like, I'm stuck. He goes, what do you mean you're stuck? Well, you didn't tell me you were doing meth, so I fell in love with you, and now I'm stuck. Yeah, you got everything you could want. I wish I was stuck like that.
Yeah.
So it's like a documentary.
Right.
But then
it turns. And then it becomes a documentary about Ben and his struggles with why he wanted to do this documentary. And then you find...
Yeah, including like shots of his father and stepmother.
Yeah.
And him going to visit them and talk to them about right. it. And people coming up to him being like... Dude, basically calling him a documentary cuckold.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you realize that there's another crew doing exactly what you're already doing.
They eventually introduce four crews, four people that are doing a documentary on him.
Well, technically the fourth one, Nikki, had stopped years ago and didn't want to be on it and just gave them some of her tapes.
But still.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan's like, oh yeah, well then there's Nikki.
Because Nikki was in 2014, as was the other guy, the third guy that we meet up with. So he did this back in 2014 too.
Right.
He got two different documentaries. Right.
Well, why wouldn't you? And then here's the big thing. The second documentary crew is supposed to be affiliated with the guy that did the...
Man on a Wire.
Yeah.
And... Something. I should know because they said it like 15 fucking times.
But that was the bit. Oh, the guys that did that were there. And the guy won.
Academy Award winner.
He won two Academy Awards for those documentaries, and he's not in it.
Right.
And so Ben flies to England to talk to this Simon Quinn guy about it. And he's like, yeah, I got nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So, and first he goes to Toronto.
Yes.
Watches this guy's film.
Vancouver,
yeah. And then pays an actor to be there to ask, like, well, weren't you guys like Dancing for Elephants or Elephants for Water and Man on Water? And the guy's like, yeah, no, we didn't have anything to do with that. No.
And then they stopped all questions. They're like, yeah, we got to go.
Yeah, instantly, yes. And so then you fast forward and Simon Quinn's like, yeah, we had nothing to do with that. He's like, oh, well, would you executive produce my documentary? And then there's kind of a pause and he does it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gets this guy to be his executive producer.
Because in the meantime, Ben basically stands toe-to-toe with Jonathan and says, you know...
Are you faking?
Are you faking?
Yeah.
Because somebody asked him the same thing that I thought, which is pretty much what everybody thought, which is, and they even said, did it ever occur to you that this might be an Andy Kaufman kind of thing?
Yes.
You know? And he's like, I don't know. And so he asks him, and he's like, Jonathan's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, gets up, throws the mic off, says, fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
I'm dying.
Well,
and he's like, well, the doctor said that you had a year to live, and now it's been like 5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of hard to take you seriously.
Yeah, he's still alive now. He's still doing a few shows a year.
Yeah. But as to his point, he was like, yeah, so what's the end game for me? Less work? Like, I say that I'm dying, and as a result, I get less work. I have less jobs. I have to hide out from people because I'm actually pretending to die. The fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, he lost work. He lost his daily show in Vegas. He lost it because of this. I mean,
but he's still doing the meth.
But when you, yep.
He even got Ben to smoke meth with him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to be, like, he said, I'll admit to it, but I don't want it to be on camera. I don't want it to be. And so they had some interesting parts there where, like, just as he'd go to light up, it would stop. And yeah. It would be like the word stop, like on an old VCR.
Yeah.
And then Jonathan presented him with a ultimatum, basically said, I'll let you film me smoking meth if you do a hit with me.
Yeah.
And then he actually had to think about it. And he went to people and talked to people. And he was like, what do you think? And, like, he interviewed some famous people. And Eric Andre's like, oh, shit, I would.
Yeah.
He's like, if I was in your position, I would do it. Because then, you know, you've got the documentary.
I like it, though, when he's talking to Weird Al and the other celebrities. And it's just like, and you don't hear him saying, I'm like, well, there's a second crew or there's a third crew. You just see the reaction of, like, a third guy?
Yeah.
And they just start laughing.
Exactly. Like, but... So, did you catch the PS during the credits?
I watched this so long ago.
So, basically, the credits are running, and he's pushing Jonathan along in his wheelchair.
Yes.
And they're just playing some music and whatever. And I was like, fuck this. And I thought, no, maybe there's something. So, I just kept jumping ahead. And sure enough, all of a sudden, the music cuts out, and you hear another recording, like a phone conversation. Yep. And it's that guy in Britain.
Oh, yes. And he goes... We loaned them some equipment, so I guess...
No, my business partner did.
Yeah, my business partner loaned them.
So I guess at some point, in some little tiny way, I had a hand in their production. And Ben's just like, huh?
Huh? Yes, I did see that, yeah. So, I mean, it was interesting.
I don't recommend it.
No, I don't either. It was interesting because it was different.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, it does tell an interesting story, but then it becomes... He then kind of acts like a needy bitch for a while,
yeah.
And
he really discredits documentaries because, oh, I'll smoke meth so that I can get the shot that I want. You're not Lois Lane chasing a story, okay?
Yeah.
And it's a fucking documentary about the amazing Jonathan, a third-rate magician comedian.
He was pretty good.
He was good. I liked him. He was not – like Penn and Teller – everyone knows that name. If you went into your former work and said, the amazing Jonathan, most people would be like, who?
When I went to Vegas in 2008.
Yeah, keep rubbing that in.
2007. I'm not rubbing in anything. When I went in 2007,
mm-hmm.
I saw Penn and Teller live.
Yep.
On purpose. I bought tickets in February, you know.
Well, I didn't assume that you tripped and fell.
But what I mean is, like, it wasn't a last-minute decision. It was pre-planned months and ahead. Oh, what are you doing in Vegas? Going to see Penn and Teller. Who? Like, nobody knew besides, like, you.
That's just ridiculous.
And Aaron at work, no one knew who Penn and Teller was. Ah, we're going to see Penn and Teller. And it was before their show they had on TV, obviously, but still. I was like, how do you know who Penn and Teller is? But yeah, no one knew.
Wow. That's pathetic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely don't recommend this documentary. It was just too weird. It got bizarre. And yeah, Ben is not a good documentarian. He like, then whining to everybody and like, what should I do? What should I do? Should I keep going with it? You know, and then showing his dad the final footage. And his dad's like, you interviewed me? I don't remember that. He's like, yeah, I guess I did.
But, oh, well, that was footage from when they were kids.
Oh, yeah.
From right after mom had died and Ben was like a kid, and he's talking to his dad. There's a couple, a few months
after. Yeah, because that's died. The thing is, we got this whole big soliloquy in there about Ben reading this letter that his mom sent him right as she was dying.
Yeah.
So he got it just after she died. And he like reads the letter, and we've got shots of him sitting on the bed, looking all sad out the window. And I'm like, is this documentary about you, or is it about Jonathan?
It became about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the two movies you watched.
You know two of the three movies,
though. Yes, I know. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's not talk about those yet.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about a movie real quick.
Go ahead.
I watched Godzilla King of Monsters.
Okay.
Did you?
Mm-mm. Okay. I still haven't seen the first one, so.
All right. I loved this movie.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
Because of the kaiju fights?
The whole movie was great.
Okay.
I liked the story. I liked the kaiju fights, obviously. I really enjoy. It's a great Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, they managed to capture the essence of the kaiju from the original, like, movies.
Mm-hmm.
But not the super horrific cheesiness of, like, the 1998 Godzilla. Or whatever, 2000 Godzilla. The fucking Matthew Broderick one. It wasn't Godzilla. You're right, it wasn't. But anyways.
Jurassic World.
Yes.
Spinoff.
Right. But anyway, so like, it's just, it's so good, and they tell a great story, and I really enjoyed it, and I loved it, and I thought it was awesome, and I give it a hard sell.
Thanks.
If you like kaiju movies, if you like Godzilla movies, you're going to love this Godzilla movie, Godzilla King of Monsters. It was tremendous. Absolutely tremendous.
Is it now fully set up for Godzilla vs. Kong?
No.
Oh.
No, it's not.
That's a disappointment.
They kept talking about, no, because there was a scene that they filmed, but they never showed.
Mm.
Which there was, there was a film that was on the storyboard, but never filmed or made, which was them going to Skull Island
mm-hmm.
and them showing Kong. And you see him looking like he can hear, like, because when they're calling all the kaiju or whatever, all the titans, as they called it, you see him kind of looking, and then he just shakes his head and goes back to what he's doing.
Nice.
Like he's ignoring the call, if you will.
Right.
But they did talk about Skull Island a lot, like in the credits. Like, so, because I don't want to ruin the movie, because I think you should watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to watch the first Godzilla movie to watch this one.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think you should definitely watch this movie and watch Kong Skull Island and then watch this. That I think you definitely should do. So I don't want to give it away, but like, it's in the closing credits, they're showing like newspaper clips, and I paused and read them all.
Okay.
And so they did sort of set it up, because they do talk about Skull Island a lot,
mm-hmm.
and especially at the end, and that's where Kong is from.
Right.
And they do mention Kong.
But and I've been hearing about the buzz.
That, yes. You know,
that's what the next thing is going to be.
This movie was so good. And so what I ended up doing when I got done watching it, because I was still awake and I wasn't tired and wasn't ready for bed yet, I got out my old Gorilla. My old Godzilla, I have two DVD sets, the original Godzilla from 1954, and then the second disc is the 1956 U.S. version with Perry Mason. What's his name?
Perry Mason?
The actor that played Perry Mason.
Oh.
Raymond Burr, I think?
Yeah.
Edited in. It's like the U.S. version is so bad compared to the Japanese version. But anyways, so I'm watching the Japanese version. And in the Japanese version, they defeat Godzilla. In the first Godzilla movie, they defeat Godzilla with an oxygen bomb that basically sucks all the oxygen out of the water and out of that area, and it kills Godzilla.
And every fish.
Yes, exactly, like in a 2-mile radius or yep. something. And it kills Godzilla. Okay. That's how Godzilla dies in the first movie. As a matter of fact,
you're talking the 1954 movie?
Yes. Okay. Now, as a matter of fact, and they use an oxygen bomb in this movie, but it doesn't kill him. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Because apparently, I didn't realize this, because whatever, but I was doing some reading. In the second Godzilla movie, when Godzilla comes back,
mm-hmm.
they actually say that this is not the Godzilla from the first movie. This is just another of Godzilla's species, another of his race, if you will.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it was kind of implied maybe a child, or maybe just like they had
Godzilla
right,
later on,
right.
But this was just another full grown, you know, like another gorilla, another tiger, another lion, just another giant lizard monster.
Yeah.
Who lives in the ocean.
Lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Yeah. But I loved it. I thought it was great, and I give it a hard sell.
Nice. That's good.
What is what's the movie you watched?
So I watched Mortal Engines.
Oh, was it worth it?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I went into it with very low expectations. I was like, this is probably going to be Drek. I mean, I know Peter Jackson's name was on it, you know, Wingnut Productions. It was beautiful. Like, it was
visually,
really,
you mean?
Really visually beautiful. The scale that they managed to do was so impressive. Yeah, the story, for those who don't know, is it's the year like 3300 or something like that. And the earth has been cracked and the continents have shifted because, you know, the war, they refer back to the 62nd war, because not as in like 6-2, as in like the war lasted 60 seconds and it was over, because okay, humankind had reached the point where they had quantum enabled weapons and they just eradicated, you know, blink of an eye, shit was gone. And they cracked the crust of the earth, and now there's two main factions. There's the cities that drive around on tracks and wheels and have steampunk type stuff, and you've got the little ones that, you know, they're just like trading posts and scavengers and stuff, and then you've got the big ones, like London is the primary one that you see here, that, you know, they have thousands, if not millions of people in them. And, you know, to see, like, the tank treads going, and then later on you see people walking in the tank treads, you know, in the ruts left by the tank treads, and they really did a good job of making it look like, you know, holy shit, they're in mud pits that are higher than their heads, because that's how deep the tank treads went. But yeah, Hugo Weaving plays the main scientist in London, and they're called a predator city.
Okay.
Because they run around absorbing other cities, taking the people in and putting them to work as slaves, or, you know, selling them off, etc. Honestly, yeah. The only thing that I can complain about here is it was too short.
Oh, really? Wait, a Peter Jackson movie that was too short?
By that I mean, I would have loved to have seen this actually spread out as a TV series. Because, as I was saying, there are two factions. There's the cities that are on wheels and treads. They're called the Traction Group.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Anti-Traction Coalition, which is people who take to the skies.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Great Barrier Shield, which is kind of like a giant metal dam that is protecting their anti-traction land where they've just settled. You know, all these other ones, they drive around the different land masses and scavenge and take stuff. These ones, they've set up a land, and it's Shao Go or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And they hate the Tractions because they're continuing to destroy the earth and take stuff. And honestly, it was really enjoyable. Like, I really found myself wanting to watch more, and I wanted to see more of the world. I wanted to see it develop more. Like, we get to see a flying city.
Yep.
And the flying city, like, it's only in there for like 20 minutes because then it gets destroyed. We get to see what they called a resurrected man, who is essentially once was a human being and now is a cyborg. Well, I'd say more android that has the brain of a man in it, but it's a completely metal body. They had their own backstory, which was kind of cool. Yeah, I just, it was not like the best movie I've ever seen, but man.
What was it on? What channel?
HBO, I believe.
Okay.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I wish that they could have made a TV series out of it, because I think it would have been a lot of fun. I think it would have been like, it could have been like a Game of Thrones type, you know?
Yep.
I enjoyed it. I would give it a sell. I won't give it a hard sell, but I would definitely say, you know, if you like sci-fi type stuff.
Well, I had no intention of ever watching it, but now I'll probably check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised.
Watched a couple other documentaries.
What you got?
One is called I Think We're Alone Now. And
is that a song?
No.
Oh.
It's about these two very odd people who
I think I've seen the previews of this.
Who are obsessed with the pop singer Tiffany.
Oh, no, I haven't seen
it. It came out in 2008 initially. This was also on Amazon. This is how weird one of the people are in the movie who are obsessed with her. They wear low-top sneakers to go running, and they wrap their laces around their ankles so that those shoes stay tight, I guess, but it's on the actual ankle skin. The shoe is tied.
Weird.
Yeah. Yep. Anyways, so these people are, this one guy's got Asperger's, and he is absolutely obsessed with Tiffany. He even reads the restraining order that she filed against him. You know, like, nice. he was, they're both, well, especially this guy.
Is he like, oh, she signed this?
He's charged with being a stalker. I mean, he seems to laugh about it.
Now, these two people, was it somebody else filming the documentary?
Yes.
About them? Okay.
Yes.
So it's not that they were like, hey, we're making a documentary.
This was somebody else. Essentially, I was reading what happened was, is the guy that made the documentary was like home on break from college, and they were just kind of walking downtown. Apparently, this guy spends a lot of his time just randomly talking to people. The guy that's obsessed with Tiffany.
Oh, okay. I think it's the documentary guy.
And he ran into him. They start talking about it, and this guy was just like, okay, this would be a fascinating person to interview about Tiffany. And so we did.
Hmm.
And it is disturbing.
As in, like...
It is disturbing.
You're not going to recommend it?
I would recommend this if you want to watch a movie and go, the fuck did I just watch? like, this is wrong. Like, wrong.
Hmm.
Like, this is wrong. Like, they shouldn't be this upset. Like, this, no, no. Like, it's wrong.
Like, did they ever reach the point where they would try to hurt her, do you think?
I don't, you know what? I wouldn't put it past them.
Okay. I think that the documentarian would have to report.
I legit would not put it past them. It's fucked up.
Hmm.
Okay? I'm just going to be blunt. It's fucked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be checking that one out, but.
Well, it's not like you're going to come away scary, but just like how obsessed these people were with her. It's
right.
Just like, it's scary. It's scary in that form. Like, this is real people.
Right.
And like when people talk about celebrities who have stalkers or whatever, it's just like, they're just overzealous fans, you know, like, oh yeah, if anyone that mocks a celebrity,
you're famous, so you owe it to them.
Right. If anyone mocks a celebrity who is upset about having a stalker or is being stalked by someone or whatever it is, and oh, they're just a harmless fan, no, watch this. And you'd be like, yeah, okay. Yeah, those are boundaries that shouldn't be crossed. So,
gotcha.
And then the last documentary I watched, I really, really enjoyed, and I would give this a recommend for people to watch. It's came out in 2017. It's called At the Drive-In. And it's about the Mahoning Drive-In in Lehigh, in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It opened in 1949, and it is possessing the largest cinescope screen on the East Coast.
Hmm.
And this drive-in is about how they couldn't afford to buy a digital projector, so they created their own niche with making it a retro theater that does themed weekends just showing classic movies in 35mm prints only.
Okay.
And it's really fascinating. It's really cool. I enjoyed it a lot. You meet a lot of kind of kooky characters, that's for sure. And these guys, they haven't taken a paycheck just to keep this place running because they have a passion for cinema and movies.
Okay.
And there's some movies it's really hard to get the 35mm prints of because, I mean, the last movie that they showed that was a 35mm print that was from Hollywood, that was a new original movie, and then after that they just went to full retro because they just couldn't get the movies, was the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And okay. Now there's, just to give you a time frame of, right, you know, when they stopped. And so for a few years now, they've been running, like, they've even managed to get, like there's this one scene where they go, yeah, well, you know, there's collectors out there have these private collections, and they love what we're doing, so they let us, you know, they loan us their versions, they loan us their copies of the film, but they still have to pay the studios the rental fee, which is roughly $500.
Okay.
For the weekend.
That's a lot.
It is.
When you're on that tight of a budget.
Yeah. So if you think about it, if it's, you know, yeah. Between concessions and ticket sales, I mean, you got to do good. Well, it's just a really fascinating story. It's really interesting. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And in one of the scenes, like I was saying, oh, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, we have to, sometimes we get these collectors that let us borrow their versions. It cuts to like a film can that says, Q dot Tarantino, Clerks 94. So it's like they have Quentin Tarantino's personal copy on 35 millimeter of Clerks.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And like, I always remember reading about this, like, Quentin Tarantino did Hateful Eight in 70 millimeter, you know, what's it called? Panavision or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or a Cinescope. And there's only like two places or three places in the U.S. he can screen that in the full Cinescope. And this is one of them. So he screens it. So Quentin Tarantino goes there and screens the movie.
Mm.
You know, so like they've gotten that type of niche that helps them out. You know, but yep. It was really interesting. I enjoyed it. You meet some really interesting characters. And I got three movies to talk about.
Three?
Yep.
Well, I know of two of them. Yep. So what's the third one?
Ma.
Really?
Yeah, I got from the Redbox. I watched it last night after you left.
How'd that treat you?
It was better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
But
that was a pretty low bar to start with.
Fair enough. Would I watch it again? Probably not.
Okay.
Nah, I really don't think so.
Okay.
But I wouldn't deter anyone else from wanting to watch it. I wouldn't say, don't watch this movie, but I've seen it. I'm good.
Okay. Any thoughts, any rundown, any care?
No, because here's the thing. These are the dumbest teenagers in the world. There's just so many red flags that pop up, and at no point in time do they go, oh, that's odd, or, oh, hey, this is weird. We probably shouldn't be hanging out in this adult space.
I like how you make it sound like that's exclusively a teenage problem.
Right, but in this particular movie, it's okay. The teenagers that are made to look like morons.
Right, right.
You know, like, all these teenagers want to do is hang out and drink booze, and they found some woman that'll buy it for them, and they'll let her drink, and she lets them drink in her basement. Of course, there's a reason for it. There's a backstory that they don't go over in the trailer at all as to why.
What I saw in the trailer was that basically it looked like, what I can assume was that Ma, Octavia Spencer, was picked on in school, and these are all the kids of the people in school that picked on her, so she's now kind of exacting revenge.
It's a bit more than that, but yeah, okay. Actually, yeah. Yeah, she was victimized in school by kids, and these are those kids.
I saw a couple of trailers where the parents were like, you know, oh my God, I remember her.
But she didn't know that when when she first invited them to come hang out at her house. She didn't know that.
So she was just trying to be a fun, cool person.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And then it is creepy, and there's all these red flags. Like, when the new girl's like, how'd she get our phone numbers? She sent them, like, this video.
Yeah.
And they just dismiss it with, oh, Haley probably gave it to when she was drunk. She does stuff like that. And Haley just goes, yeah, I do. It's that type of stuff. Like, it's just, yeah, she's an idiot. It's like they go, oh, you know, I can't figure out how to explain how she did this. Ah, you know, we'll just say the drunk girl gave it to him. He'll just say, she'll just agree to it. Or, like, when Ma loses her shit and screams and yells at them. And then, like, they kind of like, oh, okay, we're leaving. And then Ma texts them, like, 50 times. And they're like, all right, we'll come back. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
These are all people who, if they live, are going to grow up to be in abusive relationships.
It's just, there's huge disconnects with, like, some of the writing that makes it. And then you have, like, her backstory is actually interesting. And if they just would have done a better job writing the movie, it probably would be a lot better.
Gotcha.
But I didn't hate it, but at the same time, it's like, well, I'm never going to – I don't have any reason to watch this again.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like, if it was on, I wouldn't stop. I'd keep going.
Okay. I thought you were saying you wouldn't stop it, like, you would let it keep playing.
No, pardon I mean, me. Like, I wouldn't stop changing the channel.
That was way bigger of a burp than I thought it would.
What's that? Oh, the handle. Well, that's handy.
That is handy.
Yeah. And then I watched two other movies. Both of them with you.
Both of them with me.
The wife and I went to the drive-in. Did I talk about that last week and saw Back to the Future 1 and 2?
I don't think you did.
Okay, we recorded the day before. We went. She had never seen the movies. So we saw Back to the Future 1 and 2. We didn't stay for the third one because it was quarter midnight. Yeah. So we left. But,
and at that point, you probably weren't that impressed because they were movies from the 1980s and probably didn't age as well for somebody who had never seen them before.
Okay.
I liked the first. The first one was good. The second one, I hated the Biff, the young Biff. I didn't like the old Biff. I didn't like any of the Biff.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really ridiculous. And, of course, the, how they is 2015.
Yes, that's what's fun.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Like, back then, like, before 2015
Oh, yeah, because that was, like, 30 years in the future.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
It's funny watching.
We're also like, hopeful back then.
It's funny watching, like, this is what they thought 2015 was going to be. You
yeah.
Know.
Yeah, and it was all hopeful and light. And nowadays, like, it's 2019. If you saw a movie that was, like, in 2049, they'd be like, the Earth is destroyed. Everybody's dead.
Okay,
it's
I mean,
a plague land.
Say, they did have video phones, which we have now.
Yeah.
The biggest difference was, though, with the video phones, we don't also have a fax machine.
A fax machine in every room of the house.
And your video phone is your TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, like, put it on channel, and then, like, they sit and watch 5 channels or 10 channels at once on their TV.
Yeah, we all tried picture-in-picture, and that kind of fizzled out.
Yeah, the picture-in-picture didn't work, so.
Or dehydrated food.
Yes, the dehydrated Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or like the flying cars. I mean, that's the
Mr. Fusion.
Yeah. So
self-adjusting shoes and clothes and
Yep. But yeah, the first movie is really good.
Yeah.
The first movie holds up.
It does.
You know.
Yes, the first one definitely did.
And I do like the second one because they integrate the first one, the second one together, which is kind of fun.
We all know why you like the second one, Mike.
Why?
I know how old you were when that movie came out. You like the scene where you got to see Lorraine's boobs hanging out.
There's no nudity in it.
No, but when she turns to look at him, she's got the big fake boobs, and they're, like, half covered.
Oh, no, that's really gross. When she's an adult, you mean, after the boob job?
Can you leave the room so that he can tell us what he really thinks?
No, I really think they're gross, because, like, there's, like, a 9-inch gap separation between them.
Mother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the fake boobs? Yeah, that was...
Classic.
Yeah, it just... Yeah.
Yeah, she looked very, very fake.
Apparently, John as a child.
Apparently, yeah.
I'm big enough to admit it.
Yeah, I would admit it if it was true. It's not true.
You would admit it if your wife wasn't in the room.
I wouldn't.
You were 10 years old. It's okay to say that you had a Woody over a movie.
Okay, first of all, I don't think I did at 10. But I definitely wouldn't over that because it wasn't cool.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. I had women wrestlers. I didn't need that.
I don't know which one's worse.
I don't know what to tell you on this one. We'll have to watch the third one sometime, just so you can finish it out.
It was good. The third one was very good.
It's in the West, yeah. Old West.
As you've seen by the end of the second one.
Yes, because they show you basically the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay, they show you practically, like, every, like, I'm watching the...
That was bad.
Yeah, when they show you the trail, I'm watching, I'm like...
To be concluded.
They're like, they just ruined the movie, basically. They just showed you everything. So. And in the third one, Michael J. Fox's character is called Clint Eastwood.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
Don't worry, there's another Biff.
It's like...
Timeless? Yeah.
Timeless. Timeless. And,
yes.
The police officers, they call themselves. When they were... Anyway.
I know what you mean. Yes, they use, like, Starsky and Hutch.
Crockett and Tubbs.
So.
Good stuff.
Good times.
You look so tired.
My cameo.
Okay. Bye. So you and I watched the Banana Splits movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
On purpose.
It's okay.
Cartoon?
No. Okay. Come back.
Oh.
In the 1970s, you had the live-action Banana Split show.
Is this a porn?
No.
Did it give John a Woody when he was 10?
I doubt it.
That was in like the 50s.
No, 70s. So in the 70s, you had
Banana Splits?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the 70s, you had the Banana Splits TV show, like live-action show with these guys that, and they drive around the car. Okay. So they made Sci-Fi Channel and someone else, whatever, but they made a Banana Splits horror movie where it takes place in current times. The Banana Splits are still around. Certain people still love the Banana Splits.
Like the food?
No. It's these. You don't know what I'm talking about at all, do you?
No idea.
Oh, okay.
I'm showing her a picture of the Banana Splits from the Banana Splits Adventure Hour, 1968 to 1970.
Yeah, it's like the 50s.
Yeah, and it's not the 70s.
What's the end date?
1970.
Okay.
That's not the 70s. Seven. That's 1968 to 70.
It's the 70 in
it's
there.
It's the 60s.
It sounds lame. I recommend you all just shut the podcast off at this point and don't listen to this.
Okay? You say that like there are people actually listening to this podcast.
There are. So, no, there's more than one.
Mike listens to it every week.
No, I don't. I have to listen to what I already talked about. No, actually, I saw... anyway, 68 to 70, fine. But they made this horror movie, and it takes place in current times, and the show gets canceled, and so the Banana Splits, which are apparently robots and not people in costumes. I mean, obviously, it's people in costumes.
For this version, yes.
But this version, they're actually like robots or whatever, and they go bad. And it's cheesy, and it's graphic cheesy.
It had some of the most graphic kills that I've seen, and I commented on that because it really, like, it...
Like a guy gets stabbed in his back and you actually see like his exposed spine and like them cutting his spinal cord and then pushing him into this ball pit thing where he dies.
Like it wasn't just his spine. Like they actually had several vertebrae that got dislodged and moved around. Like they got one of those when you go to a doctor's office and you see like the spinal column and it's like they got something like that to make the practical.
They
effect.
Set some guy's head on fire. He didn't die straight away, unfortunately, for him.
Like, it looked like he kind of writhed in agony and then died, but then he was back later.
Yeah. But there's some pretty graphic kills in this, and it was fun. It was a fun, campy B-horror movie that brought back some characters from that old TV show that was on from 68 to 1970. And I don't know. I thought it was fun.
I did, too. I definitely would not recommend this as like a serious horror movie.
No.
But if you want something that's just campy and dumb and fun and predictable, holy God, was it predictable.
And not the best acting, but it's an hour and a half. So, you know, it's not a lot of your time, but it's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
We watched Booksmart last night.
Yes. This is one I've been looking forward to seeing.
Me too. I actually wanted to see it in the theaters because I was that interested in the trailers, and then it would never played around here. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really enjoyed this.
I really did as well.
Yeah, we had some great laughs.
Yep.
It's one of those coming-of-age stories about two girls who went through their whole high school career as being serious, serious, serious. We have to focus, focus, focus so we can get good grades, go to good colleges, have good lives, and all these other people are beneath us because, well, one of them felt that way.
Yeah.
Because they just fuck off all the time. And then they find out that the fuck-offs made it into prestigious colleges as well.
Right. Wasn't going to college because he got hired by Google to code.
Yeah. So you have all these different classes of people in the movie. You have, like, the nerds, you have the jocks, you have the sluts, you have the brainiacs, you have, you know, just... But they all seem to kind of coexist together and kind of hang out together. Or not maybe hang out together at school, but, like, outside of school, they can coexist, if you will. And I just really enjoyed it. It's about the journey these two girls on to go to a party because they want to show that they're not stuck in the muds and they want to experience, you know, high school life before it's high school's over, which they graduate the next day.
Well, not only that, but as they said, you know, they did their best to not party and to not do anything bad, and yet they failed.
Yes.
As she says, we failed because we didn't have any fun and we're not any better off than these people.
Yep. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I did as well. I thought that people might try to make the comparison to like, oh, it's a female Superbad. It's not. There's some similar.
I would definitely not call it a female Superbad.
There are some similar aspects to it where you've got the one more boisterous, heavier set friend who, you know, bullies the other one, the skinny, scrawny, you know, kind of wallflowery type, you know, bullies them and always has to decide everything. So, yeah, in that respect, I could see it. But it had some really good dialogue. Some really great humor.
Yeah.
Some well-done scenes, like that one part in the pool, you know, towards the end where she jumps in the pool.
Oh, yes. And she's swimming around.
But all the noise is gone. It's just music. And
it's true.
All the noise is gone, and it's very visually stunning. Then she gets out of the pool, and the music is still the only thing that's there. So she's walking around, and she's kind of like, you could see people's mouths moving. And it worked really well for that.
Yeah, Olivia Wilde directed this.
Yes, she did.
And I really enjoy it. I would watch this again.
I would too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would absolutely watch this again. There's some great humor in it and some great, like you said, great scenes. And just, yeah, I would definitely watch this again.
Oh, absolutely. I would own this one. This was a good movie.
You know what? I would too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not going to pay $20 for it.
No, fuck no. I mean, if it's in the $5 bin, I'll pick it up.
Right.
By then, I'll want to watch it again because it's been long enough.
Yeah.
Any news?
Got some trailers, got some news, yeah.
Fuck. I forgot to watch a trailer that you sent me.
I figured, because you didn't comment on it.
I know, well, it's just...
Criminal, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, it's a minute long. And it's very basic. You already know what's happening.
Yes.
Four countries, four directors,
yes.
12 suspects in four unique crimes. And it's all shot in police stations.
Yes.
And it's all going to be interrogating these people. You know, Haley Atwell's in there. Why can't I think of his name?
David Tennant.
Thank you. And it looks phenomenal. It's
going
to be great.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this to come out. I saw another trailer for, it was one of those, like, I got to the end of it and it was like, oh, the next in this lineup, it's a Netflix movie coming out called Tall Girl.
Hmm.
It's a, another awkward teenage story. This girl's 6'1" and a half.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And, that's without heels or anything like that. And so she's struggling to exist in school because she's tall and, you know, doesn't want to date a short guy. And then this transfer student shows up at the school and he's like from Sweden and he's blonde and he's like 6'4" or something. But he immediately goes for this other girl, you know, a popular girl. And yeah, so I don't know. It looks cute. I did that thing that I did last week where I had like three trailers that I have listed here that I was like, oh, I'll write those down. Then I'll watch them later. And I never did. So I've got to save until next week. But there was a teaser that you might actually see when you go to see It Part 2, which is Birds of Prey.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It's cute. It's about a minute long, and it's like, you know, the DC logo and Vertigo and all this stuff. And then these red balloons start floating up, and then Harley comes on screen, and she just starts smashing them, and she's like, I am so done with clowns. It's like, double meaning. But, yeah, it looks – it's a quick trailer, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's animated, right?
No. This is the live-action one.
Oh, it's live-action?
This is Birds of Prey, a.k.a. The Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Yes. Like okay, that. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the ones that I wrote down that I didn't watch yet is Blumhouse released a trailer for their remake of Black Christmas.
I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that was out.
Yeah, maybe we'll watch that after the podcast.
Yeah.
So, James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
oh, Jesus. Yeah. They're now adding Peter Capaldi to the mix.
Yeah, and someone else.
I don't know who the someone else is.
It was a Tarragon or whatever.
Oh, really? Taron Egerton?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Peter Capaldi showed up at a Comic-Con or a film festival, and he's almost bald.
Yeah, I saw some pictures from him from Comic-Con recently. Yep. Yeah.
And they asked him about it, and he said that he's not allowed to talk about it. They have to fit him with some prosthetics. He will be completely bald, and that he basically said, I'm going to a Comic-Con. Can you leave at least a little bit of my hair? And then they said, sure, but as soon as you come back, we're shaving the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, but they didn't say who he's going to be playing. So, Supergirl and Mon-El are now married.
Oh.
The actor and actress. Apparently they started dating on the show, and they're now married.
Cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
The Toys That Made Us Season 3, release date, November 15th.
Finally.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Have they announced which toys it is?
Yes. Wrestling figures, Power Rangers, Turtles, and can I get a girl one? Hold on, I gotta look it up.
That's sexist, Mike.
Whatever.
Girls can like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's a girl turtle now.
There is?
Yeah. She wears yellow.
That's April O'Neil?
No. But she was human. She just got a blood transfusion. The mutagen made her into a turtle.
My Little Pony.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, definitely. Oh, I wonder if they'll go into the bronies.
They have to go into the bronies.
I bet they'll go into the bronies.
I had heard that, you know, they do like, okay, so Netflix wanted to keep the episodes to an hour. And
what?
Yeah. Well, they're already 43 to 51 minutes. So they wanted to keep the time frame the same on it. And apparently they're spending a lot of their budget doing like doing like the showing footage of like a meeting with Kenner back in the 70s or 80s
oh,
or
90s yeah, yeah.
or whatever. So like reenactments. So I guess there's going to be less of those because when people commented about the shows, the episodes and what they liked, whatever, no one's commenting about how great the reenactments are.
Oh, okay.
And that's a good chunk of budget.
Yeah.
So.
Understandably.
So the formats are going to change a little bit this year, but otherwise, yeah.
I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, me too. So did you see the trailer for, okay, well, they released a trailer for the upcoming Doctor Who season 26 complete series release.
Nope, I didn't see
that. Okay, so, all right, this is what's interesting. So it's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray here soon. This is from the 7th Doctor, which is the final Doctor of the original run series, which was from 87 to 89,
yep.
Who also featured one of the most popular companions from the original run, which was Ace.
Okay.
She was a young girl. And her fate was kind of left ambiguously unknown because the show was canceled.
Right. And then it was brought back with that god-awful TV movie.
Right, and she wasn't in that. But anyways, through some, like, maybe that they'd still do, like, the radio plays and they've done some books or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. they've kind of said her character did this. And then apparently they've talked about her in the re-release as well. A couple of the episodes, like, if you go up there, the Doctor Who fanatics have like, well, in this episode, they talked about this and blah, blah, blah. So apparently Ace started running this charitable foundation and the acronym was Ace and made a lot of money doing so and helping people out and everything. And so the actress that played Ace in the original series, because this is 30 years later now, after it's over, she is the narrator. And she's standing there at her foundation, and she's kind of looking out the window, and she's talking about being the Doctor's companion and how wonderful it was and how much she misses him. And even though it's been 30 years, she still kind of wonders if she'll ever see him again. And then at the end, you hear the TARDIS noise.
Nice.
And then she turns around, and like her office door has like a circle window in it, and you kind of see like a cane because that Doctor carried a cane right. or whatever. And so, and it was like, if you watch this trailer, it's really emotional. And it's powerful. It's brilliantly done, like everything Doctor Who they do.
Nice.
And it makes me sit there and wonder, it's like, I wonder if they're going to introduce her in the next season of this Doctor Who.
Maybe.
Because that would be cool.
Yeah.
Especially how the way they just introduced her in this trailer for that release. It's like, they totally could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And they brought back Sarah Jane.
They sure did.
You know what I mean?
And K-9.
Yeah. So why not bring back Ace?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, she's a good age because she was like 16, 17, 18 when the show was on, mm-hmm. when she was on it. So she's still in her late 40s, early 50s now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, work. Right. Exactly. You know.
I forgot I watched another trailer.
Oh, yeah?
Season 2 of Disenchantment.
Yes, you sent me that. I watched it, too. I'm excited.
I am excited as well.
I'm excited.
It looks really good.
It looks awesome, yeah.
Yeah. They did a good recap of the first season,
mm-hmm.
and I love Elfo laying on the cloud up there, and he's like, this is heaven. Why did I waste all that time being alive? So this shocked me because I had completely forgotten about it.
Yep.
They were talking about different things coming in October to New York Comic Con.
Yep.
Lost in Space Part 2 or Season 2.
Oh, yeah?
I'd forgotten that, you know.
Yeah, me too.
We had that first season and it kind of set up the original story.
Right.
So, yeah, they're going to be showing that. They're going to be showing Picard and a bunch of other stuff. But that one just kind of like shocked me because I went, oh, I forgot. Watchmen is premiering on October 20th.
Okay.
I saw an interesting thing today about Joker, the new movie.
Okay. I have seen tons of amazing reviews.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, everywhere you can't swing a dead cat without seeing a good Joker review. But here's the interesting part is those people are all saying that it's great, but somebody brought up a good point and people are thinking about it. And this is rough because I don't want to dive into this stuff, but I still want to talk about it. They're saying that the only problem with the movie is that it essentially glorifies one disgruntled man who has mental health issues and decides to go on a spree and decides to take it out on the world,
yep.
Which we kind of have a problem with in society today.
Yeah.
You know, this is where mass shootings are coming from. It's one disgruntled person at a time, yep. Who decides that they're going to strike back. And so they're worried that by glorifying that, it could potentially inspire more people to step up their game, I guess.
I
get what they're saying.
I say horse shit.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I say horse shit.
Elaboration, or do you just...
I think everyone's quick to blame everything on something else when they can't, it's like watching that documentary, I Think We're Alone Now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the obsession that those people have with Tiffany, like, I can't wrap my head around that.
Right.
I would never be that way.
Right. But you're also a logical, rational thinker.
Right. I understand that. But what I mean is, like, so people are really quick to try to figure out, well, he's this way because of that, or he did this because of that. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, you know, he became obsessed with Tiffany and stalked her and then killed her if he had had or whatever because he saw that, you know, other fan did that to that celebrity, to Selena, whatever you want to do, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like trying to blame video games for violence. So, oh, this person, they watched a lot of horror movies and they went and killed someone. Or they played a bunch of shooting video games and they went and shot someone.
Yep.
Or whatever. Like, it's just, it's
right.
Trying to blame.
If you're already there, like if you already have the mental issues,
right.
You already are going to do something right. Like this, you can't say, well, this is what's going to push him over the edge.
Exactly.
I get what you're saying.
Because if they were so worried about glorification of mass shootings, then they wouldn't report them on the news as heavily as they did.
Right.
It would be a footnote.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, today down in Texas, a man went into a place and murdered 19 people. It's quite horrific. You know, our hearts go out to the families of all the victims.
Right.
Then they move on to the weather.
Right.
Or they move on to something else. No. Fucking CNN, Fox News, they got it on the screen 24 hours a day. Breaking news. We found out that he had a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
That's the breaking news. And then they recap, you know, 20 people dead, blah, right. Blah, blah. Like, so no.
But you can't argue with the fact that in subsequent, you know, you get a mass shooting. In subsequent mass shootings, you have people who are singing the praises of previous mass shooters.
Right.
You know, they're saying, hey, that guy over in New Zealand, he did a good thing. I like him. There should be more people like him out there. So in that case, by glorifying it and right. By showing it on the news all the time, et cetera, they are that I think that's the worry that some people have is when you put it out there, like you're saying, and it's on the news constantly and it's right. In people's faces, then there's more opportunity for these people to feel empowered from it. And that's what they're worried about here is that people are going to go into a movie that basically says, hey, the loner with the mental issues who, you know, everybody laughs at him. He strikes back and everybody cheers and gives him an Oscar.
Well, you know what they better do? They better go take Falling Down off the shelves then and not let people watch and rent that movie anymore.
That was a pretty good movie.
I just don't. He had a fucking bazooka in that movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, that wasn't believable.
I just.
The game was better.
Everyone is quick to blame or want to point a finger at, this is the reason why this person did this. No, this person did this because they're fucking crazy. That's why they did it. They did it because they hate people. They did it because they wanted to do it.
But counterpoint, they hated people yesterday. They hated people the day before. Yeah. They hated people a month ago or a year ago or whatever. You know, none of these incidents are like when we would watch Criminal Minds.
Right.
You know, it was, well, what was the trigger? What broke him? You know, and in all of these cases, they're not really coming up with those.
Right.
They're saying that, you know, well, he always hated people, or, you know, we can go back several months and see that he had journals or he had postings on his Facebook page or something like that saying he wanted to do stuff like this. And it just reached a point where they felt empowered enough. It's not like, you know, a Muslim ran over their cat and they were like, that's it. I'm finally enacting my plan.
Right.
You know, this is, they finally reached a point where they're like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm ready. I can do this. So something got them to that point where they felt strong enough, or they felt empowered enough, or they felt backed. I don't know. Either way, that's not what this podcast is about.
Well, no, it's not. But I get what you're saying. I get just tired of people having to come up with reasoning excuses for why someone did something.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because guess what? When the guy climbed the tower back at Kent State all those years ago, they didn't have 24-hour news coverage of things. They didn't have things, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even think of one incident prior to that happening. I'm sure there was, but I can't think of it. But I do know the Kent State one.
Yep.
You know, times have changed a lot. I get it. I realize that, you know, and
we didn't have social media back then.
We didn't have social media. Social media is just, I almost wish Facebook would crash.
I'd rather see Twitter crash.
Yeah?
Yep. I hate them both, but I'd rather see Twitter go away than Facebook.
I used to be a big Facebooker. Now I'm more into Twitter than I was than Facebook. I still have both, obviously, because I'm part of the problem. But, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like life was simpler.
Yeah.
I got one more news thing.
I got two more news things.
Go ahead. Go ahead with one of them.
I want to actually read this so that I can make sure that I get it right.
All right.
Another child traumatized by Michael Myers on Halloween Night 1978 is returning for Halloween Kills. The character of Lindsay Wallace was one of the two kids Jamie Lee Curtis's Laurie Strode ended up babysitting in the first film, and a new bit of Halloween Kills casting reveals Lindsay will return for the new sequel. On top of that, Kyle Richards, who played Lindsay back in 1978, will reprise the role.
Oh, really?
Kyle Richards was about 9 years old when he appeared in John Carpenter's Halloween as Lindsay Wallace. And now that she's all grown up, she's returning to the Haddonfield for Halloween Kills.
That's cool.
In addition to her acting career, Richards is one of the main cast members of the reality show The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Didn't know that. Something I was unaware of until I had to write this story. Learn something new every day, kids. Yep. And then, of course, they talked about how Anthony Michael Hall will be
Tommy Doyle.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so both of the kids that were being babysat.
But they got the original actress that played Lindsay in the first one to come
back.
Isn't
that great?
That's fucking cool. Yeah. I like that a lot. My news thing is that Netflix is going to start releasing certain shows on a weekly basis, but not one a week. They're going to release, like, 4 episodes this week, and then a week later, 4 episodes. So they're
very selective about what it
like
is.
British Baking Challenge is one, and then the other one was some R&B dance show or something. But I thought that was interesting. They're starting down that road themselves.
And my final piece of news. Save the worst for last.
Oh, good.
Tragic news.
Yeah.
Terrible. Something we kind of knew was coming. The Detour was canceled. But they said in there, just like Sam B had said earlier, they have hope that HBO Max could pick it up.
I could go see now, and they did a dickheaded cliffhanger
with the guns and the exploding car, and I was so bummed to read that, and I was like, I hate to bring the mood down, but
yeah,
shit, you know. That's such a good show.
It was a good show.
So much fun. I don't know.
That's too bad. I'm glad they waited to announce it after the season ended, though.
Yeah.
Well, all right, well, that's about it then.
Yeah, I think that's the episode for this week.
We'll chit chat with you guys next week.
We're fast approaching, by the way, because today's what? The 5th?
5th of September.
Okay. So we've only got a couple more weeks here before we start getting into the fall returning shows.
I know.
Oh, I did see the, sorry, I forgot about that. I did see the 2-minute trailer for this season of This Is Us, showing all the new characters.
Yeah.
They were like, it's a house reunion because Omar Epps and Jennifer Goodwin are in it. Jennifer Morrison, sorry.
Jennifer Morrison.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, then that's it.
That's it.
We'll talk with you guys later.
Yeah. Where are you on the social media that you hate?
It's a house reunion. Who else was on House that's on the show right now? This Is Us.
Nobody. It was just those two.
Oh, okay.
So it was basically...
Okay. All right. So I'm like...
I mean, if they had Chase on there, they'd be all set, but he's over on Chicago or whatever. Chicago Fire, I think.
Oh, I don't know if he's doing anything. So. Oh, I'm Superstar ML.
And I'm the Quantum Geek G33K.
That's the show.
For real this time.
Really real.